In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
We walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. Aaron Salter, Jr., a security guard at the Tops Friendly Markets store in Buffalo, New York, was among those who were killed in the mass shooting in May 2022. He had recently patented a way to convert a gas-powered engine into a water-powered engine. His patented system is called the AWS Hydrogen Fuel System. He said in one of his YouTube videos, quote, "What my system has done is take advantage of the residue that's produced by electrolysis. So we're going to actually start this vehicle without electrolysis." According to an article in Natural News, it reads, quote, "Some now believe that Salter's biggest mistake was filing for a patent on his technology. It was not long after this occurred that he turned up dead in a mass shooting. Another inventor named Stanley Meyer had also come up with a water-powered motor technology right before he suddenly and strangely died while dining at a Denny's restaurant with two Belgian investors. Past guest Patrick Kelly has been on the show repeating his warning to inventors to not patent and get the technology in as many hands as possible and quickly. We go now to hear that first rebroadcast of this interview since August 2014. Today we discuss the variety of free energy devices that have been created. The Practical Guide to Free Energy Devices is the title of Patrick Kelly's ebook. It's about 1 million words with nearly 3,000 illustrations, and it's probably one of the only places you'll find information about free energy devices, how they work, who invented them, consolidated in one place. An interview with Patrick Kelly on the show, Sailing Beyond Knowledge, was sent to me from someone who posts on the etherecwarriors.com site. This topic has been discussed on this show, but now this is a great opportunity to dive into it. We talk about the various categories that Patrick has organized free energy devices into, such as magnets, HHO, aerial, gravity, motionless, buoyancy, and a general category. We also talk about QEG, free energy, and the potential money-making swindle involved in that project. This type of deception isn't new. Patrick explains how the effort to suppress free energy technology was embedded into the fabric of society many decades ago. For example, Nikola Tesla's Manhattan laboratory was destroyed by arson. We'll also talk about the recent interference and attacks made against free energy device inventors. Patrick Kelly is a retired civil engineer and joins us on the show. Patrick, welcome to Another News.
Thank you very much for having me on. I appreciate the compliment.
Well, it's great to have you on and to discuss this information about free energy. Can you give listeners a bit about your background and how you got interested in free energy devices and this technology?
All right. I'm a civil engineer, retired at this stage. In 1985, I saw a program on a UK channel called Channel 4, which was titled It Runs on Water. That's a program that has been on the web but has now been removed because it allegedly breaches copyright. It's not a great program from my point of view, because while it does show a number of things where free energy is involved, it doesn't give you any real information on how to follow up or to investigate it. The program itself was quite interesting, and that was what made me aware of the fact that there was such a thing as free energy. Having gone through a normal university education where everybody swears to high heavens that everything is less than 100% efficient, it is quite interesting to discover that that's not necessarily the case. But I then went onto the web to search for more information. And I found it very difficult to come across anything that was of any use. I spent a number of years investigating the various aspects of free energy. And then eventually occurred to me in 2005, which is 20 years after I'd started, that it might be helpful to put onto the web what I had managed to find out. And for that reason, I produced a very simple website and put on the information that I come across. So that's how I got interested in the subject in the first place.
Can you tell us a little bit about this ebook that you put together as a result of the website?
Well, it just came together fairly naturally. I started by producing individual papers on particular devices as such, starting off with Stanley Mayer's very efficient electrolysis of water, which is something that seemed to have got lost in that nobody seemed to know how to do it. But a friend of mine called Dave Lawton, who lives in Wales in the UK, spent a solid month working on this particular cell design. And that shows an awful lot of application on his part, because day in, day out, he was getting absolutely nothing out of the cell. But he refused to give up on it, and he kept going and kept going and kept going. And after a month, the cell suddenly burst into life and produced vast amount of HHO gas mix at very little current. It's a technique that requires the electrodes to be insulated. And the month it was taken up, the production of hydrogen was being absorbed back into the electrodes, so no gas came off. But it eventually built up a layer of insulation, actually on the electrodes themselves, a process generally referred to as conditioning. And once the electrodes are conditioned, then you get a very different result. Other people have developed on from there, and now it's possible to condition electrodes with a coating inside 24 hours. But it's a very efficient system, with typically about 800% efficiency.
You sent me a list of the various technologies, not complete, just some of the main ones associated with free energy devices. How many free energy device patents exist in the United States?
Not very many, because the majority of them have been taken out of circulation, well, prevented from going into circulation, typically by false claiming that these are of national security importance to the U.S., and they aren't. They're of importance to the people who have already got the monopolies on energy products, and they're the people who own the patent office. We may think of patent offices as being a public body, but they're not an actual fact. They're a private organization owned by the Rockefeller family. And they, I'm told from an inside source, have already suppressed more than 44,000 American free energy patent applications. So I can't actually answer your question, but there is a very large number that have been suppressed. And I've come across quite a large number that have managed to get through. There were also patents being issued by other people. But quite apart from that, then you also have the intellectual property system now, which runs alongside patenting. But I can't answer your question. The number is large, very large. And they generally rely on the fact that most people never find them. And if you do find them, most people don't understand them. And if you do understand them, most people who do understand them are not capable of actually replicating them. So it's a very effective system blocking the information.
And if you do replicate them, then you're pressured to replicate them in real time again and again in front of an audience?
No, there's no problem in replicating in front of an audience. Thomas Henry Morey did that with very large amounts of electricity being produced from an aerial and an earth. They managed to dispense with him, typically by shooting at him, and that persuaded him to stop talking about what he was talking about. He also demonstrated that you could cut the power cable and put a piece of glass between the cut ends, and it didn't have any effect because the energy that he was capturing and using normally is actually cold electricity, which doesn't run through the wire, but runs along the magnetic field around the wire.
There are more than 40,000 patents that are suppressed.
Yeah, but never got into print.
Never got into print. But the implication here is that there are many ways to make free energy devices, and that's what you've cataloged in your book, your e-book.
Certain degree, yes. The reality is that we live in a sea of energy. It's like us being a fish that lives deep down in the ocean, mid-ocean, and trying to get that fish to understand what water is very difficult. We're living in a field of energy that covers the entire universe. The amount of energy is incredible. We could never, ever, ever exhaust it. In any one cubic centimeter, anywhere in the entire universe, there is enough energy in that one cc to create all of the visible matter in the universe. The amount of energy is just staggering. To do that calculation, you'll be using the famous equation E equals mc squared, which everybody says, oh, Einstein invented that, and he didn't. It was produced decades earlier by Oliver Heaviside, who was a serious and great scientist. I don't think there's anything that Einstein actually produced that is right, to the extent that I personally suspect that Einstein, as a member of the opposition, put there to distract us from reality. Just a personal opinion.
That's an interesting point you made. I'm not certain about that. I haven't looked into it directly, but I do know that just reading about Wilhelm Reich and Nikola Tesla in their meetings with Albert Einstein, he began to form a friendship with both of these gentlemen, these inventors, and threw them under the bus later on. He did that with Wilhelm Reich and Nikola Tesla.
Yes, I'm not surprised, because people who are interested in unconventional systems do tend to strike up a friendship between themselves. It's not too surprising, actually. But the opposition that we face is more social and financial than anything else. The real opposition to having any form of free energy is because of the loss of control that would be suffered by the people who own the oil and power companies. They really enjoy the power that they have, where they can affect a lot of people by manipulating the price of what you call gasoline and or diesel fuel that's used here a lot. The situation is one where the actual cost of producing what you call a gallon of gasoline is probably something in the order of 30 or 40 cents at the very outside. And the rest of it, on top of that, is tax and profits. I'm more familiar with UK prices. In the UK, it would be about 20 pence to produce a litre, and a litre is sold for about 132 pence. So that's an enormous difference. A lot of tax is applied, and the filling stations buy the fuel in at around 50 pence a litre. And they sell it off at about 132, typically. So the profit margin is enormous, but the filling stations don't get away with all that much because the government immediately taxes their profits. So the government actually is a major player in opposing free energy devices. They wouldn't wish us to have the freedom that would be produced by having your own energy generator in your house. They really, really don't want that. They know that if that happened, the vehicles on the road would become electric or running on hydrogen or running on compressed air, where the actual power is produced by your own generator in your own house. And they really, really don't want that, because that is a major strand of both their income and their control of people.
Patrick, before we get into the different types of free energy devices that you've outlined in your book, have you imagined what a world would look like, or that transition? Have you imagined what that transition would look like from this controlled fossil fuel system to people with energy, free energy devices in their households and driving vehicles around that run on the same systems, free energy? Have you envisioned that transition and what that world would look like?
Yes. The thing that most people miss is the size of the problem that we have. If you had 100 companies producing 1,000 generators a day, every day of the year, it would take tens of years before everyone who wanted one got their very first one. The problem is the sheer volume that we're talking about here. The moment we've got about 7,000 million people in the world, and most of those people would want a generator, but let's say that we're only talking like 1 billion rather than 7. It would take many decades for production to reach each person who wanted one. So it's not a case of a sudden overnight switch that people often talk about. That doesn't happen. It's not physically possible to have that. What you will have is a gradual introduction of free energy devices, where the amount paid to power companies tails off gradually over decades. And the same with vehicle fuel. It would be a small tail off year by year over literally decades. But the difference would be for the people who had the generators. They would have a lot more money in their pocket because they're not paying enormous fuel bills. And when they have that, they will then spend it on goods, which would improve the economy. And there would be more money circulating round and round. So generally speaking, the introduction would be slow, gradual, and very, very beneficial.
I wanted to get back into the different types of energy devices here, free energy devices. You started off talking about the HHO free energy devices. Can you describe for listeners what this category is?
Yes. I should perhaps have said that because we live in this sea of energy, everything that we have is already powered by it. We think of sunlight, but sunlight comes from the sun, and the sun is actually powered by this energy field. We think about wind power devices, but the wind is also produced by the effect of the sun, which is powered by the zero-point energy field, which is everywhere. The same goes for everything. People say, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could tap into this energy field? But we already are. Everything that grows, biomass, fuel, whatever, is produced as a result of this energy field, including us, incidentally. But that's by the way. But to try and answer your question, the thing that captures the imagination of people most appears to be producing hydrogen from water. It's a system whereby, if you think about it, it becomes fairly obvious that the water is hardly involved at all, because you pass a current through water and that breaks it down into mainly hydrogen and oxygen, and those, when you burn them, produce water. So you start with water, and you end with water, and you get energy in the middle. So it doesn't take very much thinking to realize that the water is not the source of the energy, but there is an outside source of energy that has been tapped into when you actually do that process. And that energy field that's been tapped into is the zero-point energy field, and it is what makes magnets have their power. It is what produces the excess energy in all free energy devices. Free energy devices are nothing actually very special. It's merely a case that these are open systems rather than closed. In other words, you can't have more than 100% efficiency in anything. That is physically impossible. I mean, you just cannot have more than 100% of anything. And if you consider that some devices produce energy flowing out of them, the energy that you didn't put into them, it is only common sense to realize that the energy that's coming out is coming from somewhere else. And present-day science doesn't want to believe that, so they swear to high heaven that it is impossible to have a free energy device, in spite of the fact that they're all over the place. I mean, if you think about it, one of the popular items is around the world yacht race held every 4 years from memory, and that is very avidly followed on television and by sports fans. These boats sail very rapidly all the way around the world, and they don't use any fuel. The fuel is prohibited in this particular race, and yet these yachts go very rapidly all the way around the world, thousands of miles, carrying large crews. So where does the energy come from? The answer is it comes from the wind. Where does the wind come from? It comes from uneven heating of air by the sun. And where does the energy from the sun come from? People will swear that it is because you get fusion of hydrogen into helium in the sun. But if you do the sums, you'll find out that that isn't nearly enough. The actual energy of the sun flows from the zero-point energy field. So everything on this planet, everything in our life, is powered by the zero-point energy field. But this is something that the people who are making the big profits do not want you to know. This is something that's been suppressed in teaching organizations for at least 100 years now, from the turn of the century. This is something that, if you want to read about, you're better off with a very, very old book. Some of the books that I have on my site are 100 years old, and they're from people who were examining and following the way things really are before the establishment people decided it wasn't a good idea for us to know these things. But generally speaking, every single free energy device is one way or another way of drawing energy from the zero-point energy field. Typically, the zero-energy field is evenly balanced, positive and negative charges randomly distributed everywhere in the universe. But if you can nudge the free energy field, what happens is that you get an unbalanced small area where you've just done the push against the actual field, and the result is there is a corresponding energy flow to get the field balanced again. So the way that you do it to get power from it is you can apply a very high voltage pulse, very short, very sharp, and that's enough to unbalance the field and create a flow of energy. And if you do that very fast, like thousands of times a second, you get what appears to be a continuous flow of very powerful energy, which is available for use. There are various methods of doing this. One of them is you can use a battery, and a battery has got a positive terminal and a negative terminal, and together they are called a dipole, and they affect the zero-point energy field surrounding the battery and create a continuous flow of energy in all directions as a result of that. And you can also get the same thing from a magnet, a permanent magnet. Permanent magnet has got a north pole and a south pole, or more strictly speaking, a north-seeking pole and a south-seeking pole, and they form a dipole, and that unbalances the zero-point energy field and produces a continuous flow of energy through the magnet because of its properties, and that flow of energy we call lines of magnetic force. And those, provided you can make them asymmetrical, would provide you unlimited power forever and ever.
Is this something that Faraday had rediscovered?
He had his equations, which are very complex, and his equations show that free energy is possible. His equations were messed around immediately he died, and they were simplified by someone else to make them easier to understand. And the way they were simplified was throwing away the part that allowed for free energy. So the resulting equations that are put forward as Faraday's and aren't, they're somebody else's, show that in theory, if you're looking at a sailing boat and analyzing it, you exclude all the wind that passes by the boat and doesn't touch it. So in other words, only one boat can sail on an ocean, because according to the equations, that boat takes up all of the wind, which of course is ridiculous. Because you can have 1,000 boats side by side, all sailing on the same wind. So the answer is yes, Faraday was aware of free energy and allowed for it in his equations, but people don't really want you to understand that. And so his equations have been simplified to exclude the free energy section.
That's a really good example of how far back the level of suppression goes.
Yes, well, you'll find that it will certainly be in place around the time when the financial suppression came into play. In other words, when your Federal Reserve, which is a private company, was set up, and when the Bank of England was set up. These things are set up specifically to defraud people. I mean, there's no question about that. For example, it's the same sort of style as suppressing free energy. It's part and parcel of the same strategy as such. And it's so ridiculous. I mean, the American government has got every right to print money and to use money that they print. But the way that it's run at the moment, due to outside pressure, is the American government does not print money. What it does is it subcontracts it to the Federal Reserve, and the Federal Reserve prints money. So the U.S. government says, we want $1 billion. Federal Reserve prints $1 billion, gives it to the U.S. government, and says, you owe us 20% of that, and we'd like it back, please, as soon as you're ready. And if you don't pay it back in a year, we will charge you interest on the bit that you haven't paid back. And they do that year after year after year. And at the moment, most of U.S. taxes go to pay the interest on the interest of something that shouldn't have been a loan in the first place. I mean, it is totally ridiculous. But that's the same sort of razzle-dazzle that's been run on all of us at the present time. And one of the ways that they managed to keep this going is they have taken control, effective control, of the main media and of the teaching establishments. And they manage through payment of money, typically, money which is taken from you, to ensure that this is a self-perpetuating, total ignorant state for the main body of people. So effectively, we are being defrauded left, right, and center. Typically, more than 80% of everything that you earn is taken from you illegally by people who aren't entitled to it. And I will stop at that point. But it is really aggravating that we are being fooled to such a large extent in all aspects of life.
You gave a great example regarding prohibition and the real story behind what was going on at that time. Can you tell listeners about that?
Yes, if you wish. Originally, Henry Ford produced his first car, very famous car, and he was intending to run the car on a modified Magneto produced by Nikola Tesla. This was commonplace for Nikola Tesla. He would invent things and then adapt them for practical everyday use and sell them to fund his work. But Henry Ford was persuaded, instead of doing that, to make his vehicle run on a thing called petroleum or gasoline. And this was a waste product of the oil industry that they couldn't work out how to dispose of. So the fact that Henry Ford was able to not only just take it from them, but pay them for it, was very, very profitable for them and probably quite amusing at the same time. But there weren't very many filling stations at that early stage of when there weren't that many cars. So if you had a car and were going to go on a long journey, you needed to fill up the fuel tank, but not with gasoline, because it wasn't available, but you filled up at one of something like one of 50,000 farms which had alcohol stills. Alcohol is a very, very useful liquid to use around the farm, and it was quite common for farmers to have stills. So you would fill up when you were away from home at a farm. Eventually, the oil industry managed to produce enough gasoline to be able to supply all of the vehicles on the road. But they had the problem then that they had opposition from the farms. If they put up the price of gasoline, then the farms would undersell them, and people could run their cars quite easily, alcohol from a farm. So they wanted to put their farms out of business, so they introduced a bill called Prohibition in the States, and only in the States. And Prohibition was put forward as being something to stop humans drinking alcohol, which is totally amusing, because they have not the slightest interest in whether or not people drank alcohol, although they did manage to make a profitable sideline out of it, selling it during Prohibition. But the objective of Prohibition was to drive out of business those 50,000 farm stills. And when they managed that, then Prohibition was dropped completely. It was ridiculous in the first place anyway. But that's the reason for what happened in the States.
It also ties into the war on drugs as well, if you examine what's really going on there, and it exposes a similar pattern. Specifically, with gasoline and free energy, a great example of suppression and deception. I wanted you to explain that to listeners. Let's go back into the categories that you outline in your ebook, the different categories of free energy devices. And we go down to QEG, and I mention that because there have been some people who are developing over-unity devices, free energy devices, based on the QEG. And can you tell listeners what that is and the potential scam related to it?
All right. I better start by saying that this is my opinion. Because I don't want to get sued for it, but I'm fairly certain that WITTS is, in actual fact, a group of con artists. I've had a lot of emails from people telling me how much money they have actually given to WITS for information which should allow them to build a free energy device. And what they have got has been ridiculous. Total rip-off of the people involved. In fact, the only time that I've received emails with swear words in were when people were describing their feelings for WITS, having paid them a lot of money and got nothing useful from them. But the QEG, I believe to be a complete con being run by the opposition, generally with the idea of discrediting free energy devices as such. For instance, the QEG is pretty much impossible the way they have it described. They insist that the device must be assembled by a professional electromechanical engineer, which doesn't sound like the blurb that they start off with saying, this is the device that anyone can build. They also insist that you have to have extreme constructional accuracy. And because of that, they say the components should be bought pre-assembled from their designated suppliers, which doesn't sound like a home-built device at all to me. They also request donation to WITS, and that doesn't sit well with me at all. I'm assured by a Tesla expert that the supposed link with Nikola Tesla's, one of his patents, is completely spurious as not relevant in any respect. They also talk about adapting their linear device into a circular device. Now, experience shows quite clearly that that never, ever works. That's something that you just can't do. It doesn't happen. Also, one of the most suspicious things is the wire specification that they give. They say you should use AWG number 10 gauge wire. Now, that wire has a current rating of 15 amps. There are two equal windings. I don't think that the windings are in parallel, but let's give them the benefit of the doubt and imagine that they are. That would make the maximum sustainable current for that wire to be 30 amps. Ignoring the fact that you need an extra 10% to make it self-powered, the claimed output of 10 kilowatts represents a current of 47 amps. And if that's the case, at 220 volts, you're talking 47 amps. In the American 110-volt system, you're talking 94 amps. Now, either of those are going to fry the wiring to destruction in just a minute or two, literally, if conventional electricity is flowing through the wire. If it's cold electricity, then only a tiny wire would be needed, and certainly not AWG number 10. Finally, they claim that the winding has to be done by a professional company. So this puts the plans that they claim to be home-built plans completely outside the scope of the home builder. So all in all, it strikes me as being a rather low-grade scam being run against the general public. They also have, I believe, run two group operations whereby they have produced and built a generator for each of two remote locations in the middle of nowhere. Now, I certainly approve of the thought, but I would be pretty certain that you will not get any useful power from either of those two devices, and that the whole operation was just a publicity stunt. But personally, I'm quite sure that the QEG device is a con.
A friend of mine who is a listener and had witnessed the QEG assembly and demonstrations with other people in the room had noticed that one of those companies, that those professionals, they're in New Jersey. He was asking me in an email, just wondering, I wonder if these people have ever been harassed or bothered by those who are involved in suppressing this technology. And it's very interesting how they don't seem to be bothered by it, is what he was pointing out.
No, I wouldn't expect them to be bothered at all, because what they're doing is trying to discredit free energy devices as a whole. And that is what the opposition wants. So they'd be left in peace.
Patrick, I might ask you, exactly how are they discrediting free energy devices?
Well, what they'll do is they'll say, this is a free energy device, and they'll make them, and they get people to build their own. And then when they don't work, because they were never able to work, they will get those people to phone them for technical support at $500 an hour. And after the individual has spent an awful lot of money trying to overcome the supposed faults in a system, which weren't there in the first place, because it never could have worked, then the builder will be totally disillusioned and will go out onto public media, like Facebook or Twitter or whatever, and announce that free energy devices just don't work, that this is all a con operation. That's because the one that they bumped into, which is the QEG, is a con operation. But it would destroy the credibility of the real free energy devices.
I would ask you the other way. What system could you see occurring that would credit the free energy device world?
This is very difficult because to get something that works into production and actually sell it is extremely difficult for two reasons. First of all, the governments will oppose it enormously because their revenue depends on the sale of oil products. So they will introduce health and safety regulations, which mean that the particular device has to spend 5 years in testing, and then they will refuse to issue the certificate at all. I mean, they don't have to give authorization if they don't want to. They don't even have to have a reason not to do it. They will trump up some reason or other and say, this isn't suitable. You can't sell this in our country at all. I mean, this is a ploy that was used against Chen He Wang, the Chinese guy who spent 40 years developing a permanent magnet motor generator. And he had versions that would produce 1 kilowatt and 5 kilowatts and 100 kilowatts. And he wanted to give his design freely to every government in the world so that they could make their own. This, of course, showed that he didn't understand that the governments were actually the opposition, and they would never, ever allow something like that to happen. So this is the situation that any inventor faces. First of all, you've got to put a lot of money into producing these sort of generators in a factory. Now, nobody's going to put that sort of money in unless there is a patent to protect them some way or other. And you won't get a patent on a free energy device because the patent offices have got specific instructions to all their workers that they must not issue a patent to a free energy device. And any that have got through have been because the examiner didn't understand that it was a free energy device as such. But the situation then is that the people with the money tend to be the opposition, because they're already ripping you off. And that's why they're rich. And as they're rich and have most of the control of money, they will immediately oppose anything of that nature. I mean, for example, take Caltech. Caltech produced a fuel reformer-style carburetor for vehicles. This increased the miles per gallon enormously and cut pollution to pretty much zero. And they spent $1 million developing, testing, proving, and promoting this particular design. And Arvin Meritor joined with them to actually produce it and put this excellent design into new vehicles, which would have created an enormous improvement for the environment as such. But then, no sooner than they had signed an agreement with Arvin Meritor, that Arvin Meritor was taken over by a financial group, which then immediately dropped the carburetor from their range of products. So not a single one was ever produced. And that's now with an organization who had $1 million to spend. If you take the situation of the typical inventor who has spent all of his spare cash over years developing his product, he doesn't have the money to do that. So he has to go looking for money from someone else. And the thing is about inventors is that they are naive in the extreme where it comes to running a company or organizing something financial. Mm-hmm. They just don't think that way at all. So most inventors tend to get completely screwed over by the financial people. Some will be bought out, Some will accidentally sign over all rights to the people who are supposedly going to produce the device for them, and then who promptly shelve it and it's never seen again. But generally speaking, even if they do go with somebody who has got good finances and actually genuinely wants to produce it, there will be such financial opposition to that company that it just will not survive. So the problem is much more social than technical. We have lots of different ways of producing free energy devices, free energy generators. It can be done through hydrogen. It can be done through aerials. It can be done through batteries. There are lots of different ways that it can be done. All of these free energy devices, they all tap into the zero-point energy field, because that is the source of all energy everywhere in the whole of the universe.
Let's go down to another category that you outline in your ebook. In that category of free energy devices, the system is gravity. Can you tell listeners about some of the devices that use gravity as the main source of power for free energy?
Yes, there are various aspects. Let me take one, for example, which is called the hydro. It's a buoyancy system developed by James Kwok in Australia. Its output is 100 kilowatts, typically. And what he does is he takes a big tank, tall tank of water, and uses cylinders of compressed air to put air into a buoyancy device at the bottom, and the air gets released at the top. But the buoyancy of the particular buckets on a continuous chain push the mechanism which generates power as the buckets rise all the time. Now, that's a very simple system, and that is powered by gravity, because it's the weight of the water in the tank and the difference between the weight of water and the weight of air, which is about 1,000 to 1, is what can actually power the device itself. There are a whole string of other gravitational devices. One of them you will see in my ebook in Chapter 4, which deals with gravity devices, at the end, is a very large metallic construction which generates 30 kilowatts of excess power all the time. And there are photographs of that there. Another system that uses it is one that was used by William Skinner in 1939. He demonstrated it in 1939, just as World War II was starting. Based in the States, he has a system whereby weights appear to be continuously falling. They were falling sideways, though, rather than downwards. And they turned continuously and provided power to a drive shaft which operated all of his workshop. And in 1939, most of the tools in a workshop were mechanically driven, as there was not all that much in the way of electricity being used. But the system that was produced by William Skinner was so effective and so well balanced that it would drive a 12-foot-long lathe which could actually turn steel and take shavings of steel off the actual workpiece. And it, at the same time, he operated a mechanical saw and as well a drill press. And all those were powered by gravity alone. He needed almost no fuel. What he did was he used very small electric motor to wobble the top of the shaft to which a weight was attached. And it took very little power to actually move the top of the shaft. And that made a heavy weight tip over sideways continuously all the time. It was a very effective system. The details are in my ebook, certainly. And you can see it in operation in a video from the Pathé service, which was operational back in those days. It was effectively a newsreel report of William Skinner's system, and you can see it in operation. And the input power is so small that he was able to run it using a single thread to power the system, a loop of one thread was used to connect his electric motor to the entire system. Now, that powered his entire workshop, and you can imagine how much power you can actually put in through a single thread. Not all that much.
You have a date here of 1939 for this.
That's the date that he demonstrated it. But he'd been working on it a lot before then, because what he demonstrated was his fifth version of the system, where he got it down to a very fine balance. I'm sure his earlier systems were much more simple than the one that he showed. The one that he showed is not all that complicated. It looks complicated when you look at it first and before you work out what in actual fact all the different parts are. He has four separate shafts, so you can ignore three of them because they're just repeats of the first one. And he's got a diagonal bracing on the shaft, if you pick one to look at. He's got diagonal bracing on that, like on the mast of a yacht, to stiffen the mast. So you can ignore that bracing. So you have a vertical shaft and a weight at the bottom, and you merely move the top in a small circle, the top of the shaft in a small circle. And that tips the weight over, so it's always falling sideways. And falling sideways under gravity is providing a lot of power to the general output of the shaft. The shaft spins round, but the amount that it spins round by, the power of spinning the shaft, is not provided by what you're doing to the top of the shaft. It's provided by the heavy weight falling under gravity. So you get an enormous gain in power when you do that. Personally, I think the amount of gain is about 1,200 times. So in other words, you get a gain of 1,200 times the power. But this is a system that I would expect to be one that could be made by your average person quite easily. It's not something that I would consider to be complex or needing high precision or anything like that. It's a common sense, practical system, which doesn't call for any electronics.
I wanted to ask you to describe the device that is put onto the carburetor of cars to increase their miles per gallon, and it doesn't burn fuel. Can you tell listeners about that?
There's more than one device that would match what you're asking. For the moment, I would guess that you're talking about the JoCell. The JoCell is a combination of stainless steel cylinders placed one inside the other and filled with water. Now, if they are exactly the right dimensions, the water absorbs an enormous amount of energy from the surrounding zero-point energy field, and it can channel that energy silently into a particular engine. Enough energy flows into the engine to actually run it if you want. You can pass the energy through to the engine by using an aluminium tube, but you don't let the aluminium tube actually touch the engine block. The last inch or so is made from a plastic tube, and you don't have to put it into the carburetor. You can put it directly onto a bolt head on the actual engine block, and that will let the energy flow into the engine as such. And it is perfectly possible to run an ordinary production vehicle doing that. And it's not an increase of MPG. It is something that will run the engine completely. But you can imitate that JoCell by using three layers of copper wire wound with specific lengths and on top of one another on a small plastic former, like piece of plastic piping. And if you connect that to your engine, you connect one wire to the engine block itself, and you leave the rest unconnected, and you don't provide any power to it at all. And that imitates the JoCell to a certain extent, and people who have tried it are getting typically 20% improvement in the miles per gallon, in spite of the fact that there's no input power, there are no moving parts. In that version, there's no water. It is just a very simple tuned system to pick up some of the external energy field. But it can be quite effective doing that. If you want, you can use, instead of that, you could use an electrolysis cell known as a booster. Very simple to build, and you can get anything from 20 to about 80% improvement in miles per gallon, very simply by taking some of the electrical output of the engine and using it to split water into hydrogen and oxygen and mixing those into the incoming air that's been drawn into the engine. Now, what happens is that those gases, particularly the hydrogen, which is in single atoms rather than combined, will pre-split the gasoline droplets that are in the engine, and you get a much better burn of your normal fuel to such an extent that you will certainly no longer need a catalytic converter to burn any unburnt gas that's coming out of the engine itself. But that will give you a very intensive increase in the miles per gallon. And that's the more common way of doing it. But I'm probably strayed a bit from your question there, and I do apologize.
That's okay, Patrick. This is absolutely incredible work that you've done, and I appreciate you going through some of the details here. We're going to wrap up this first hour, and if you could, Patrick, can you give listeners your website where they can get your ebook?
Yes, certainly. The address of the website is typically www.free-energy-info.com. So it's www.free-energy-info.com.
Okay, got it. Patrick, thank you so much for being with us, and we're going to end this first hour, but continue to talk about the free energy devices that you've outlined in your ebook and related suppression, of course, directly toward inventors or just toward the concept or idea of free energy in general. Thank you so much for being on In Other News.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady.
There's a highway telling me to go where I can now. Such a long way, I don't even know where I am.